Hey everyone, Nate here. This episode is going to be a special episode that Rob Hovek actually did with Nick Olson's Chalk is Cheap podcast. So this is going to be an episode that I basically just released of that, and it is basically to give you all an introduction to his podcast without having to go over and do it. So if you like what you hear here, you like what Nick is doing with his podcast, you can always head over and like his podcast and follow his podcast as well. It's called Chalk is Cheap and can be found pretty much the every single major podcast form. So wherever you're listening to this, it'll probably have it as well, unless you're on Podbean. So I guess without further ado, here's the podcast.
Getting through the winter in the Twin Ports can be tough, but it's especially tough on your vehicles inside and out. So after winter's over, it's a great idea to have your car professionally detailed. And I know what you're thinking. You got to call, make the appointment, make arrangements to drop your vehicle off. Who's going to pick you up? Who's going to bring you back? That process can be a strenuous one. But I have an answer for you. Detail and Dash. The only Twin Ports detailer that comes to you so you don't have to go to them. Their mobile unit is convenient, and their fast service does not sacrifice quality. You tell them what you want, and they get it done at your convenience. How much easier could it be? It's time to clean that car of yours up by calling Detail and Dash at 218-591-7005. That's 218-591-7005. Or you can visit DetailingDoneYourWay.com. That's DetailingDoneYourWay.com to book an appointment online. So quit stalling and experience detailing done your way.
I used to hang out down at Jack's Pool Hall. You go down there and don't do nothing at all. You wanted to play some cards, there was a game in the back. If you wanted a shot or something, you went out to Jack. If you had a little money, you was a grade A fool. There was a guy down there who used to shoot a little pool. Rack 'em up. Rack 'em up. Rack 'em up.
Welcome to Chalk is Cheap, the first and only Twin Ports Pool Podcast. I am your host, Nick Olson, and I'm coming from the Forward Mile Sports Memorabilia Studio, the local sports memorabilia company that brings you the players you want at a price you can afford. And here we go. We're kicking off episode 9, and I just had a centipede crawl up my leg as I am recording the open of this show. Ah, man, I hate them things. Those are probably top five creatures that I cannot stand. They just gross me out. I don't know about you. I don't know where he went. I flicked him off my leg. But in any event, got to keep my eyes peeled here now for the rest of the show. Welcome to episode 9. Welcome to Chalk is Cheap. If you're checking us out for the first time, appreciate you taking the time out of your day to hit the play button on whichever platform you found us on. And since we're talking about that, might as well get it out of the way. Of course, we are on our home network, Spreaker. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, you can now find us on iHeartRadio and just about any other podcast platform that you listen to your podcasts on. And make sure you hit that subscribe or favorite button. And again, if you do leave us a review on any of these platforms and on our Facebook page, your comments could be read aloud at the end of the show. And of course, we will do that. We'll keep naming off the likers of our Facebook page most recent, and continuing up the ladder of our original likers, and we'll keep that tradition going on here strong. And we've got a really entertaining episode, I think, for most of you, because we're going to be joined by a man who co-hosts another podcast himself, the Cue It Up podcast, Rob Hovek. Again, he's somebody who is from Superior, played collegiate pool. Yes, I said that. He played collegiate pool for the University of Wisconsin Superior and the University of Minnesota Duluth, and happened to win the 1980 Collegiate National Championship in 8-ball. And we talk about that in our conversation. We touch on O'Hallen's Pool Hall and Joe's Pool Hall and the pool halls of the time. And we talk about some of the great players in the 1960s in the area, and we talk about how he is up for the recently created Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. He is a 2021 nominee, along with another Twin Ports native, Ron Dobaszynski. They're both up for nomination, so two Twin Ports guys could find themselves in the Hall of Fame this year, which is pretty darn cool. We talk about all of that and more. And speaking of pretty darn cool, there's an event happening right now, possibly as you are listening to this, over the weekend right now. And of course, this episode is going to be released May the 30th. So at this time, the Cue It Up Cup 2 is happening. And again, if you haven't checked that out, I encourage you to do so. We're proud to be just a tiny little bit a part of that event. We're a small sponsor and we're appreciative of Nate and everything he's doing. And we're just happy to be a part of that. So keep your eyes peeled for that. If you're returning from the first Cue It Up Cup, this time it's a completely different cast of players and for the most part. And again, this is going to be some top-notch quality pool. And so I encourage you to check that out if you're looking for some more pool content. So what else is on tap on today's show? We're going to go around the Twin Ports, talk about the latest tournament happenings in Superior at Top Hat Tavern. And we're going to take you back to the classroom and sit you down in another edition of Pool History with Mr. Olson. And those things are happening before we talk to Rob Hovick. But before we get to all that, let's say thanks to our sponsors. A big thank you for coming aboard to Hog Wild Smokehouse and Barbecue, Solon Springs, Wisconsin. Top Hat Tavern, Tower Avenue, Superior. Olson's Plowing and Lawn Care, Superior, Wisconsin. And last but not least, Detail and Dash. Remember, you get the promo code 8BALL for 10% off any service that Detail and Dash offers you. Stay tuned for more to come as far as offers that you, the listener, will be offered just for following along with Chalk is Cheap. Those things are coming down the road. And speaking of that, we're about, I would say, a little under a week away from launch of our website. We're just about ready to launch, and you've seen a few sneak peek photos of it already. It's really sharp looking. I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. We're going to try to make the most of that, as I've said. It's going to be your one-stop shop for all your episodes here of the show, your descriptions, your quotes. You can comment on each and every episode what you thought right on the website. You can find links to certain YouTube videos, and especially that part of the website will grow here as we move forward, because we're going to bring you some video content down the road. And of course, you probably have seen some of our Facebook Live stuff that we just kind of did for fun with Top Hat doing their private parties. We shared some live video on there. So some of you found that interesting. That was just for a little bit of fun. But in all seriousness, we will continue to build our YouTube section. So you'll find all that stuff on the website as well. Our gear, we're going to have links to our gear and different things happening there as well on the website. We'll talk about our local partners and our sponsors of the show. And so everything that you need will be there. We're also going to work on a tournament announcement page where you can find tournaments in the area, tournaments that are going on, to keep you all up to date with what's going on there. So it should be your one-stop shop with anything regarding the show or regarding pool in the area. So we're really excited to get that going. And speaking of going, we do have to take a short break right now. Help us pay the bills here a little bit with Chalk is Cheap. But don't go anywhere, because when you come back, we're going to go around the Twin Ports and talk about the latest tournament results at Top Hat Tavern. Time sure flies during a quarantine, but I'll tell you one thing. If you get sick and tired of starting that old mower up like I do, or if you got a gigantic yard and you just say enough is enough, I know the guy that is the man for the job. And that's Joe Olson of Olson Lawn Care. So pull out that phone of yours and call 218-591-0776. That's 218-591-0776. So you can sit back, crack a cold one, rip open a bag of potato chips, or sip on a spritzer, and finally enjoy the sound of this. All right, welcome back to Chalk is Cheap, and it's time to go around the Twin Ports.
And now it's time for Chalk is Cheap's Around the Twin Ports.
All right, to start things off here, we're going back to Thursday, May 21st, which was the first private party tournament that Top Hat Tavern held after Wisconsin establishments were able to open their doors. And taking that one home was Rick Phillips. He went 5-0 in the tournament, took first place. Bob Montgomery took second. Clint Roberts, third. Brett Elvila took fourth. And Dale Connor rounds out the top five. Then we look at the second private party tournament that took place Saturday, May 23rd. And Chad Falcon took that one home again, went 5-0. Derek Gergen took second. Brian Baker, third. Chuck Kennedy, fourth. And Rick Phillips rounds out the top five. So a first place finish and a fifth place finish for Rick to start things off after the pandemic here. And then taking a look at number three, which took place the next day on Sunday, May 24th. Adam Jaros takes that one again, an undefeated win. Steve Linnell, second. Mike Maxim, third. Jerry Pola was fourth. And Brian Green rounds out the top five there at the private party number three at Top Hat Tavern. Then Tuesday, May 26th was number four. And Rick Phillips ends up taking that one. Tom Nicolosi takes second. Don Bloom takes third. And Ty Johnson took fourth. And so Rick Phillips, 2 out of 4 victories and a top five in the other. So he's had himself a nice little start here. He's played the most tournaments as anybody else, but he's taken advantage of that and done pretty well so far. And really, that's all that we've got to report on here in the Twin Ports. They are going to have another tournament, and as I record, it has not taken place. That will be May 28th, so it's something that we can touch on right here on Chalk is Cheap during our next episode. And with that being said, I want you to grab a pencil and a notebook because it's time to get back into the classroom with me, Mr. Olson, with another edition of Pool History.
Boys and girls, grab your notebooks and pencils and take your seat because it's time for Pool History with Mr. Olson.
For today's pool history lesson, we fast forward the clock from lesson two a little bit to 1961, to a pool room with concrete walls, a set of bleachers, and the smell of stale beer and cigarettes permeating throughout the room. This pool hall in Johnson City, Illinois, would become the home of one of the largest tournaments for hustlers in the country. The name of that pool room was the Q Club, and the owners were none other than the Jansko brothers. Polly and George Jansko were recently posthumously inducted into the 2019 BCA Hall of Fame, transformed the sport at what's dubbed a middle-of-nowhere beer shed that brought pool into the national spotlight. During the time, tournament players from all across the country, the media, and the public all traveled to Johnson City to go witness these revolutionary tournaments. Their first tournament was held October 25th, 1961. The prize pool was full of $5,000 of cold hard cash. Why are these tournaments so memorable? Well, for a few reasons. The first being that it brought out all of the soon-to-be world-famous pool hustlers of the time, and many of whom are still recognized as the most famous pool players of all time. This included New York Fats, who became Minnesota Fats, Wimpy Lassiter, Daddy Warbucks, and the Knoxville Bear. The tournament was such a success in 1961 that in the following year of 1962, they doubled the prize pool and expanded from not only one pocket, but the straight pool and nine ball. The most prominent part of 1962's tournament was the fact that the Janskos allowed African Americans to participate in a billiard tournament for the first time. Youngblood Washington, a self-proclaimed bank champion from Chicago, Illinois, was the first African-American to ever participate in a billiard tournament on this scale. The following year, in 1964, the tournament continued to grow, and the prize money doubled again to $20,000. A big part of that was due to ABC's coverage of the tournament on live television. That was probably a blessing and a curse, because it was only 8 years later that the IRS, the Illinois State Police, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation raided the Q Club ending an era of maybe one of the most famous Hustler tournaments of all time. So there you have it. That's another edition of Pool History with Mr. Olson. Make sure you have those notes written down. I'm going to check them at the door. And on your way out, you're going to hear our final break of the show, because we're going to be joined by Episode 9 guest, 2021 Wisconsin Billiard Hall of Fame nominee, Rob Hovick. That's coming after the break. Don't go away. I have the rent for it, I'm all the next, I don't know. So let me slide it on, you know, people. I notice when I come home in the evening. Hey, whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, or a master, there's a few things that we know matter most. And that's shooting on pool tables that have quality cloth, good cushions, and being able to shoot pool in a quality environment. If you're looking for that place, then look no further than Top Hat Tavern at 705 Tower Avenue in Superior, the home of the Diamond Table and the only business in the Twin Ports that has a three-cushion billiards table. Jeff and the gang have you covered for all of your pool shooting needs. So it's Top Hat Tavern, Tower Avenue in Superior, and don't forget to tell them that Nick sent you. There's nothing better than good old-fashioned barbecue. But in the Twin Ports, the problem has been nowhere to go to get it. Well, that problem is just about over, because the time is near for Hog Wild Barbecue and Smokehouse to open up in Solent Springs, Wisconsin. Your new home for everything barbecue, and a new location to find Kim's world-famous Bloody Marys. Stay tuned for updates on Hog Wild's Facebook page, and in the meantime, click the link in their feed to buy yourself some Hog Wild gear. It's almost time to get Hog Wild at Hog Wild Barbecue and Smokehouse in Solent Springs, Wisconsin. Chalk is cheap. And one thing I'd like to mention before we go to our interview with Rob Hovick is the fact that Mike Miller has raised over $2,000 combined for the pool rooms here in the Twin Ports, the Break Room and Top Hat Tavern. So he donated over $2,000 that he collected and raised to help our pool rooms in time of need. So kudos to you, Mike Miller. Great job. And thank you to everybody who donated to help out these businesses when they really need it. That's what we need. We need support in the pool community, and I wanted to just make sure that I mentioned that before we get into what you've all been waiting for, and it is time now to go to our interview with Mr. Rob Hovick. All right, I've got 2021 Wisconsin Billiard Hall of Fame inductee and co-host of Cue It Up podcast, Rob Hovick, on the line. How you doing, Rob?
Well, hi. I'm doing okay. Thanks a lot for asking me to be on your show, Nick. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. You know, there's and for the most part, the people that I've had on so far, I've said this to a few people, but really there was a short list when I had this idea of creating this show and having the quote-unquote legends of the Twin Ports area as it regards to billiards on the show. There was only a few names that I had on a short list that I knew I needed to get on the show, and you were one of those short names. So, again, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to join the show here.
Well, actually, Nick, I'm going to work at the same time I'm on the show. I make teeth for a living, and I'm gonna kind of do like work on three of these while we're doing this show, and hopefully when the show's done, I'll have these three ready to all done, waxed up, and ready to invest and cast when we're done. So I'm gonna see how this goes.
All right, go. Hey, that's a first. That's a first. That's the first on the show. Working and talking.
on Chalk is Cheap. I like it. A multitasker. nothing wrong with that. Well, Rob, let's kick this off with the fact that you are a 2021 Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame nominee, and this is relatively a new thing, this Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, and I think it's a great idea, and it's a great thing, and I recently became a member, so I'm now one of the 700-plus voting members of the Billiards Hall of Fame here in Wisconsin, and I thought it was interesting that – you know, there wasn't anything like this up until now. And, of course, we have the VNEA Hall of Fames and BCA Hall of Fames and different things like that on a national level, but nothing in Wisconsin. So what are your thoughts on the Billiards Hall of Fame, and how do you feel about being a nominee for 2021?
Yeah, you know, it was such a great idea. And there is an underlying reason, I think, that I got nominated. And it's because I know somebody who started this whole thing. You know, I mean, I have to be honest about that. Johnny Kramer, a fellow who came to Marshall right about the time I was opening up the pool hall here in town. He had a job working for Dunham's, and he's just a crazy, avid pool player, obsessed with pool. And I had a couple 9-foot Gandy tables in the pool hall at the time, 6-7-foot valleys and 2 9-foot Gandies, and he would play on the 9-foot Gandies, and he'd come in every day. And I was there one day when he came in. I wasn't there every day, but he would come in there just about every night after he was done work, and he'd spend 3 hours on that 9-foot pool table. And I went over one night and was watching him play, and I noticed he had a little kind of a hitch in his wrist a little bit, you know, and I could see he was a good player and everything, and I was going to volunteer a little helpful advice for him and his stroke, because every now and then I do that and without being asked to. And his response to that was, I said, "Geez, John, you mind if I give you a little pointer? About your wrist is kind of cockeyed there and this and that." And he goes, "Well, you want to play?" And he didn't want to hear anything I had to say about the way he shoots or anything else. He just wanted to play. He said, "You're going to criticize? You're going to critique me and the way I play? Here, let's play some." And so what we did was we played a race to 100. Well, 100 sets.
Oh, wow. And,
okay, a race to 100
okay.
sets
yep.
of 7 on the big table. And 50 of those were played winter breaks, and 50 of them were played alternate the break. In other words, the first one to get to 50, we'd stop, and we'd go to the different format. And so we established a friendship, and he lived here for a couple of years, and we played a lot of pool together. We played on pool teams, went out to Vegas together a couple times on a local team, you know, to play in the BCA out there.
Yep.
And we didn't have VNA here in town. We only had the BCAPL for a national-type tournament. APA wasn't around then. And so our friendship just kind of grew even after he moved away. And he was active in the BCA tournaments. I happened to be president of the BCAPL in Wisconsin at the time. And so we saw each other yearly for sure, if not more often than that. And we talked back in, like, 2005 about, you know, the pool players in Wisconsin, the history of pool in Wisconsin and things like that. And we actually talked about the Hall of Fame back 15 years ago. John and I did. So when it came to fruition that John actually took the bull by the horns and went ahead with this thing, he called me and says, "You know, I'm going to nominate you." and so I said, "Whatever, John. You know, I think this is a cool thing, and there are a lot of people historically in the state of Wisconsin that could be honored, you know." And so that's what happened. Kind of had like an inside, I don't know if I ever would have gotten nominated if the guy who started the whole thing wouldn't have been the one to do it. So, but I do think it's a unique thing. There are other states now that I think are going in this direction. I believe, I'm going to stick my neck out there and say Arizona and Colorado, possibly.
Yep, you're right.
I have heard that are two states that are going in this direction. So that's pretty exciting, you know, if this catches on. And heck, we can always say, well, Johnny Kramer was responsible for starting this statewide Hall of Fame deal for pool. You know what it does? What I like about it, really? Pool's been in the dungeon for, you know, 50 years by and large. It's the sport where the seedy characters play it. And it's starting to get a new face now. And these podcasts are helping tremendously, and tournaments and national tournaments and all this stuff is helping. But this elevating the game to say that, geez, there are people out there who we're going to start noticing because they play this game that was associated with, for a lot of years, crime.
Right. Right.
Where do you go when you want to commit a crime? Well, you meet your buddies at the pool hall. I mean, so... I just saw, my wife and I just saw the other night on TV a national ad for getting people back together in this country. It was to promote healing in the face of the pandemic and the virus scare. And on TV was a pool hall for the first time in a positive, very well, I've seen it now in some commercials, they have it as a positive thing too, but this was a commercial televised nationally for businesses that are going to, you know, start coming back and hopefully will come back. And there was a pool hall there, and my wife looked at me and went, "Did you see that?"
"Yeah."
"What's a pool hall?" And I went, "Yeah, look at that. We're coming out of the dark ages here," I think. So, and from my perspective, you know, I never really looked at it, pool, negatively. Of course, my because I loved the game. I just loved the challenge of running out. Loved the challenge that the game was different every time. Shots are the same, but the layouts are different. I'm talking about eight ball especially. But so that's how I feel about the Hall of Fame. Pretty happy about that, that it started here, and the people who've been inducted so far are very deserving of it, and the ones nominated are deserving of it. And my guess is somewhere down the road, John called me not too long ago. He said, "You didn't get in this next year, but, you know, maybe the year after or the year after that." He says, it will happen because everybody who's been nominated will eventually get in.
To me, it kind of is compared to, like, you know, when the Baseball Hall of Fame, where they get on the ballot and they just have to get a high enough percentage of the vote to get in. And eventually, normally, if they make the ballot, eventually they're going to get in. And I agree. It's a great idea. And, you know, it's funny because I wasn't aware of it until recently. And because, like you say, there hasn't been anything like this, you know, state, as far as a statewide Hall of Fame in any states around the country. And so now this is Wisconsin is kind of taking the bull by the horns, as you said, in doing this. There's such a rich history of pool, specifically in Wisconsin. And even if you square it down even further in the Twin Ports, which is predominantly what my show talks about at this point, is the history of pool in the Twin Ports. And that brings me to why, you know, one of the main reasons why I wanted to have you on the show is because you're from the Twin Ports. So talk to me a little bit about your time playing pool in the Twin Ports and maybe some places you went and some people you knew back when you were a native of this area.
Oh, yeah. The Twin Ports is home to me. And I go up there, I don't know, for sure, trout fishing on the Brule River. I've done all my life, and I still do, if I can, make it up there. A couple of names in my era of playing, people in the area that I think, you know, very possibly, if you could ever find them wherever they are, I don't even know if they're still alive, but who were pretty influential in my trying to get better at the game, because these players were better than me. And so it gave me a challenge. Don White, he was a Native American from Superior, the only Native American family in the town at the time, was an exceptional pool player. And he was like my nemesis growing up, was the person I looked up to the most. I can remember when I played him in college at the University in Superior, we had a game was 150 to 138 was the final score, and he was ahead 136 to 112 at one time. And that was the final game to see who would go to the regional tournament for the ACIU. And Gary Johnson, I'm sure Mike Miller talked about him maybe a little bit. Greer was his nickname. Mm-hmm. He was very instrumental because he was better. You know, he was like a year older, but just a better pool player. And then there were players from Joe Tomaselli, Joe Vinci. These are players from out New Jersey, Pennsylvania way, who were going to school at the university there at Superior. You know, just people I could look up to and challenge myself with. And then there was the Helen's Pool Hall and Joe's Pool Hall in town. Yeah. And I frequented Helen's probably every night for 3 years, 2 or 3 years. I had a letter from my mother so I could get in before I was 16. My father wouldn't sign it, but my mother's signature was enough at the time. So Helen said, okay, I don't need both signatures. Because my dad, he was practical.
Yeah.
And
yep.
He said, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you pick up a buck or two here and there, you wear it. When, later on, you might win a beer or two in a bar or whatever, but, you know, come on, start thinking about your future. So he was more where my mom just said, well, it's just a fun thing for him. Let him have fun.
Right.
Joe's and Helen's and Joe's. Joe's I went to while I was supposed to be at church. So that was like every Sunday. I'd go to Joe's at 10 in the morning and stay till about 12. And so that was my religious training, was meeting the players from the north side of Superior who participated at Joe's mostly, and then from the other parts of Superior, they went to Helen's. It was just kind of the thing they did. So I got to know those guys a little bit, the north side pool players. And they had a couple of bigger snooker tables there, too, that were kind of fun to experiment on, the 12-footers. We had a 10-footer at Helen's.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the places I went. I did go, though, before I had my driver's license, because the better players weren't always available during the week. Whenever I had I had braces on my teeth, and whenever I had a braces tightening appointment over at the Medical Arts in Duluth, I'd take my pool cue, and I'd take the bus, and all the money I had at the time, and I would go to a place called Ringside. It's on Superior Street. It was an upstairs pool hall, like the place was, kind of, only much smaller. It was very narrow and very long. And the guy who was running it at the time was the infamous brothers from Duluth, the Williams brothers, and Teddy, Peter, Roman, and Johnny. And Peter was working at this Ringside. If he'd not had some ownership in it, maybe, too, I don't know. But he was one of the best pool players in the Twin Ports at the time. So I took all the money I had, and after my dental appointment, I didn't have to go back to school. So I'd go to Ringside, and I would play Peter Williams straight pool to 50 for $5 a game. And this was in had to be 1963, I would think. So $5, 1963, people were making $70 a week, about $2 an hour.
Right.
So,
yeah, $5 was a lot then.
So it was a decent bet. I mean, it wasn't a dollar to go to 50, and he wouldn't play for a buck anyhow. So I had the least he would play for was $5. So that's what we played for. And he would beat me 50 to 32 on average. He'd beat me by 20 balls. Sometimes I'd get to 40, 42 or 3. But I learned how to play. That was straight pool at the time. And he was just better. And he would most of the time, I probably won 10% of the time. So one out of 7 or 8 games to 50. I lost almost every one. And I saw what he was doing, and I couldn't stop it, of course, because he was a better player. And he was making just enough balls so I couldn't win. Which is the perfect hustle game is straight pool. That's perfect. Because if you know you can run 40 and the other guy can run 30, you're never going to lose.
Right,
pretty much
right.
Never.
Yeah, you can you can gauge your opponent a little more accurately in a game like straight pool versus 9-ball or 8-ball. You know, things sort of happen in 9-ball and 8-ball that can change things, a little more luck involved there, I would think. You know, and I think you mentioned these pool halls, Helen's, Joe's, Ringside, and the Place in Duluth.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for a lot of people is fascinating, Rob, is in that era, in your era there that you're talking about, is how, and even into the 80s, I think, a little bit, is how, you know, kids who were under the age of 18, under the age of 21, were able to go into pool halls, play the game, learn the game, because now if you compare it to today, and obviously these establishments, you know, realize that it's a business, and to get the adults, the people who are going to spend the most money in their place, how do you keep them there? Well, liquor, alcohol, sales of other things besides, you know, selling the air to rent a pool table. And so that's where, you know, a lot of these places make the money. And so I think for a lot of people, it's just hard for them to fathom that. But, you know, it's a different time, a different era. And I think that's why, you know, especially in this area, Rob, and I don't know, you know, what the case is exactly down in the southern part of the state. But, you know, up here in Superior in this area, you know, a lot of the players are noticing a trend that's really negative for the game as far as there isn't enough young people picking up the game and playing. And I think that's, you know, that whole thing, that stigma of, like you talked about too, about the negative parts of pool and how, you know, podcasts and some national attention, different things like that, that's starting build a little bit, is helping that.
A person who's going to change it. You are going to change it. Jerry Fredrickson's going to give you a table. You're going to set it up and you're going to teach it as a class.
That's my
plan. In the
public
school system, I think those kinds of steps, you as an individual, being a teacher, having an in that profession and loving pool and promoting it through your podcast, tremendous example of someone who's taking the bull by the horns and going ahead and saying, wait a minute, we're going to somehow, at least in the Twin Ports, get the next generation interested in this game. So I applaud you for that. If Minnesota had a Hall of Fame, I'd nominate you just for that fact alone.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, you know, it's something that I recognize along with a lot of other people. You know, we take I run a local pool league here, Superior Trailblazers Pool League, and if we take the average age of people in that league, it's north of 40 years old. You know, so the writing is on the wall as far as there's just not enough people. So we're trying to get the youth involved. We're trying to start some things, you know, Top Hat Tavern in Superior, before the pandemic hit, started some things with some youth lessons and different things like that, and they're trying to get the ball rolling there, and I'm going to be a part of that as much as I possibly can. You know, so I think those are good things. And, you know, you mentioned that you played pool at the University of Wisconsin Superior, and I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize, and that does still exist today. There are college tournaments for billiards, and you were the 1980 National College Champion. So tell me about that experience a little bit.
It was just wonderful. I played in the ACU College Tournament 4 years, 3 years at University of Superior, 1 year at UMD, like 8 years later than the other tournament. 1967, the first college tournament I played in. Won the school tournament, won the regional tournament, went to the Nationals in 1967 and came in 9th through 12th out of 16. And that was straight pool back then. And then I played in again two more times, 75 and 76, and won the state school tournament and the regional, and went to the nationals and got straight pool again with 7th and 8th and 5th and 6th, respectively. And in 1980, I was going to school up in Duluth at UMD. And here again, they had the tournament. It was straight pool. And I barely, almost lost my very first match at the school. And that was single elimination. I'd have been done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I went to the regionals, and a very strange thing happened. It was that year the regionals was held in Madison because it was a five-state regional tournament, and it happened to be in Madison. And the fella I was playing on the winner's side, toward the end of the tournament, made a rules infringement, kind of. We got into a game where he had me stymied. It was pretty close. And instead of opening the rack up, I took a three foul in straight pool. And that means the balls get racked up again, and you break the balls then from behind the head strip. And that's not what happened. The three foul rule happened. I got minus 15 points, and then he took the cue ball behind the rack and played safe. And I stopped the game, and I went, well, you can't do that. I said, that's not right. You can't do that. He says, oh, yeah, I can. And so the striped shirt refs were there. There was two of them. He asked one to come over, and the ref says, no, he's fine. Let him do that. So he ended up winning the game by like 10 balls after I had minused myself 15. And so I came back, had to play. That was on the winner's side. I came back on the loser's side. I had to play him again, and he killed me. He was really good, and he just had a great match and killed me. So I didn't win that regional tournament that year, which is kind of unique. It was won a national tournament, right? But I didn't win a regional. Well, there's 15 regions in the country, and every year they take a particular, for one reason or another, a second-place finisher and invite them to come to the national tournament. And that particular year was me.
Oh, wow.
And I did, yes, I did file a formal complaint with the college union's board of directors about that the refs didn't know what they were talking about. And this guy basically, to put me in the loser's side, cheated. And right. Or rules, infringement. And he might have really believed that's what he could do and didn't purposely cheat. I don't really know. But and he was from the University of Wisconsin, Madison. He was a player there. So anyhow, that's the way it went. And then I went on. And it was the Nationals were at Carbondale, Illinois, at the university there. Pretty spectacular kind of setting. The difference was, though, all the regional tournaments were straight pool. In 1980, it was the first year the college unions nationally went to eight ball on 9-foot tables. So
oh, wow.
After all
okay.
The straight pool tournament, I get to the Nationals, and I don't even know it when I get there. It's eight ball, not straight pool. Yeah. So and that was exciting. I loved eight ball, so it was pretty cool. And the guy I played, believe it or not, he put me in a loser side. I had to come back and beat him twice. It was a race to seven. At the end, I did beat him twice. But at the end of the whole thing, which means I played this guy. John Cusack was his name, from New York. We played three races to seven, eight ball, on a 9-foot table. And the score at the end of the three matches was 19 to 19.
Wow.
So it was pretty darn exciting. Put me on a loser's side 7-5. I came back and I won 7-6, 7-6. So you couldn't get any closer. Any better.
Right.
And he was tremendous. He was a nine ball player from New York, tremendous pool player. But he was a nine ball player, so he could bank as good as anybody I ever played. And he banked out of, I don't know, 25% of his rack.
Wow.
Yeah. Had a little trouble playing position, but didn't matter. In fact, the last game on Hill Hill, 6-6, the ball before the eight ball was a bank shot. He missed it. He hung it.
Oh.
Bobbled, hung it where I don't win.
Wow. So for somebody like him who shoots a lot of bank shots and prides himself on that, for him to hang that, that probably eats at him to this day, I'm sure.
Who knows? I don't know. he was very flamboyant character. I can remember he just kind of the way he kind of danced around the table a little bit, you know, and he dressed mod, I guess you could say, 1980.
Yeah.
The mod look, bell bottoms, flared out vests, and sports coats, and he was the real deal. I was kind of like, I thought myself as kind of like the hick from northern Wisconsin. And I looked at him as, wow, this guy's been around the block. He can play. Where I was kind of like battling through it, where he was just shooting the balls in. It was kind of like, you know, who reminds me of this guy now is just Filler, Joshua Filler, the way he's playing.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
So that's my story about the national tournaments.
I think it's interesting to a lot of people because a lot of pool players in general and just the general public don't realize that there are college competitions in billiards and that they're still going on to this day, and just people just aren't aware of that. And so the fact that you were able to win a national championship is pretty darn cool. If we fast forward a little bit, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was the fact that you became a pool hall proprietor yourself. You were the owner of Rack and Roll Billiards in Marshfield from 2001 to 2010. So I wanted to ask about how you got into that, how you decided to open up a pool hall yourself, and sort of the trials and tribulations of doing that.
Yeah, there was a small pool room in town, and the fellow who was running it was having problems, and he just vacated the place and kind of moved out of town, got in debt a little bit. And I went, God, there's a spot. That was really a nice spot for a pool room. And I talked over with my wife, and she said, absolutely not. So I went, all right, here we go. This is my chance. And I called a fellow named Jerry Fredrickson from the Twin Ports who yep. I knew had access to a lot of different pool tables and pool equipment. And I said, Jerry, what can you do for me? And so he made me a package deal, 2 9-foot Gandies and 7 6 Valley tables. And he says, this is how much. I'll bring them down. I'll set them up. I'll put new felt on them for you. And him and Daryl came down and did it all in one day, set them up,
wow.
put them in. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And it was a package deal. I thought it was a real, real good deal for all that work he did. And that's how it started. So I took that same space that had already been known as kind of a pool room, and then I just renamed it. I wanted to name it Bust Your Balls. My wife wouldn't let me. So it got toned down. Because I used to watch a TV show where the guy would answer the phone, Empty Arms Hotel, and I thought, Bust Your Balls Billiards, how can I help you? would kind of have a nice ring to it.
Right, right.
But no, it didn't happen. But anyhow, that's how it started. And you know, I worked full time about 2 blocks away. I had my dental lab, and I could go into the grocery store before work in the morning and stock the cooler up with soda, and then in the afternoon just run over there when the beer drivers would come to town. And the city was very cooperative with me. I didn't put any hard alcohol in the pool hall. I just had beer. So they were going beyond the city ordinance and allowing me, as long as I maintained a fairly strict behavioral policies in the pool hall, and didn't allow anybody, I think they said under 14, they didn't want anybody in there. And I said, fine,
okay.
No problem.
Yep.
I can take care of that. So that was nice of the city to do that, because without the beer sales, the place probably wouldn't have made it as long as it did. Because pool league nights then, the kids wouldn't come in there on pool league nights anyhow, because all the tables were filled. They couldn't play.
Right.
But I did have two kids' nights. I had Friday night was basically a kids' night where you get in the door for $3 and, you know, you can play pool all night, and Monday nights. And so I'd have, you know, I'd have 40 kids in there. Probably maybe 50
or 60. That's a good number, yeah.
On a Friday night, but 30 or 40 on a Monday night. But then at 10 o'clock, they had to leave, so they couldn't stay after that. That was it. Done at 10. So between 6 and 10, the place didn't open until 4. So, but it was productive after school. You know, some, the sodas were, I don't know, probably 250, 300 sodas a day, canned pop. So that was decent just in soda sales. So, yeah, I worked full-time, and then I had a couple of people that worked for me at the lab put time in at the pool hall. And then I had to hire, you know, I think two, well, it wouldn't be full-time because from 4 till, well, we were open till 1 probably at night. But they were, I was lucky as far as people working for me. I just was lucky. I had very, very honest, sincere help that were, they're just nice people. Nice kids.
Yeah.
And they didn't have sticky fingers, and they weren't, you know, they were respectable, they were responsible, and that doesn't happen too much. I just got lucky. And
yeah, that's
I had a big help.
Two
of my pool playing customers who were also more or less friends of mine married two of the girls that worked at the pool. they're still married.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so I like that. That's kind of fun. Yeah, they have families now, and these guys met these girls that were working for me at the pool.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, you know, it's like you said, it's tough to find good, honest help, especially in, you know, pool hall, bar business, and stuff like that. So the fact that you have that's pretty cool. Makes things more helpful for you. And the other thing is the fact that this is kind of along the same theme here a little bit that we're talking about getting young people involved in the game. And, you know, you were able to do that there in Marshfield, and then the city kind of stretched
with that alternative school. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The real school wanted nothing to do with it because they had to jump through too many hoops.
Right.
But the alternative school said, no problem. What day you want them over there? We'll just come over. And that was only 2 blocks. Actually, the alternative school was across the street from my dental lab, which was 2 blocks from the pool hall. Advantages of a small town sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you and I chatted a little bit a couple days ago about some of this stuff. And, you know, you said that, you know, a lot of those kids that came in, you never had a problem. And some of those kids, you know, became, you know, really good players and still play in leagues that are upstanding citizens today.
Yes, they are. They are. Two of them are married here in town and still play pool and play fairly well. But, it worked out good for them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's awesome.
But then only lasted so long. And then the funniest story, it's not funny at all, but it's goofy. To me, is when I sold the pool hall, of course, all you're selling is the tables. Well, it ends up, the guy who bought it didn't pay rent for, like, 2 years and stopped paying me for the pool tables. So I had to get my pool tables back. He kind of closed up shop, moved out because he owed everybody money. And the guy who owned the building locked the doors. I had to buy my pool tables back from the guy who owned the building. But
wow.
The good news is I only paid 30 cents on a dollar for what I paid for him the first time. So I could be the only pool hall owner in history who bought his pool tables for his pool hall twice. Funny and stupid at the same time.
Yeah. You know, you might be right on that. There may not be another person who's done that.
Okay, I got a story for you. I told you last week when you called, I'd have one goofy story.
Yep. Yep.
And this has got to do with a piece of Kamui chalk. A fella, an acquaintance, just gave it to me. He says, "Here, Rob, you can get more use out of this than I can." He was like a beginning pool player, and he says, I ordered two of these here. You just take one. Well, I went, are you sure? Really? I mean, it's a $30 piece of chalk. He says, give these away. He says, no, go ahead. See if you like it. Well, I was taking stuff out of my Cuse case one day in the garage, and for some reason I set the chalk, piece of chalk, on the roof of my car. And, of course, then I forgot it up there. And then later, sometime that day, I drove into town. And it was like a week later, I noticed when I went to play pool that I didn't have my piece of chalk. And I went, what did I do with it? Where did I go? I had it in my hand. I knew it was in my case. So I go, well, oh, no, I had it on top of the car. I remember I put it on the top of the car and I didn't put it back in my case. And I drove off, so I went outside down the road, and I walked on the shoulder of the road about three blocks. And our shoulders are kind of wide with a lot of gravel here on this country road I live on. And there, three blocks down the road, I caught a glimpse of something in the dirt, in the rocks. And it was the Kamui chalk wrapper with not a stitch of chalk in it. Just the wrapper, and it was as flat as a pancake, which means only one thing. That chalk fell off my car, and some other car came by and ran it over and demolished the chalk inside of the wrapper. But the wrapper was perfect. All the writing was on it and everything, so I brought the wrapper home, and I saved the wrapper as a remembrance of my piece of Kamui chalk. So the Kamui chalk cup, whoever made Kamui can be proud that their wrappers hold up after being run over. The chalk gets vaporized, but the wrapper's perfect. What are the chances of that? What are the chances of finding the wrapper three blocks from on a dirt road, right?
Wow.
So that's my Kamui chalk story.
Well, hey, yeah, there's a little a cheap plug for them that they probably weren't expecting. That wrappers are probably the best wrappers in billiard chalk. You know,
yeah, and of course, chalk was the best chalk I had ever used. I mean, for sure, it was just kind of pancakey. That's all, and it marks the balls up when you're shooting. Yep. And it also this is kind of funny. If you ever have some, put just a little bit on the edges of your. You don't need to put it on your whole tip. Just need to put it on the edges. But if you load up your tip with the Kamui chalk, the whole tip, so it's all over the place, mm-hmm. and you strike the ball in the center of the tip, it will make a mark on the ball, right? And that mark, as the ball is rolling across the table, will make a mark on the table wherever that mark on the ball was. So you'll have a spot the size of the tip of your cue stick every, 7 inches? However many inches the ball turns, and that spot comes up again. like a little trail, around the table. And I only noticed this when I started playing three cushion billiards. I never noticed it anywhere else because you're in pool rooms and bars and everything where the cloth is all filthy dirty anyways. And so you really can't tell. But at home here on my billiard table, where I clean the cloth every day or after I play, it was pretty noticeable. I do like it, though, because you never miscue.
Yeah, I've heard that. You know, I've never used it.
You can forget about ever miscuing yet with that job.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've never used it. Predominantly use master chalk, which is good chalk.
Sure, sure.
But I've heard that it's the real deal. It's good stuff.
You put it on, you don't even have to chalk up every fifth, sixth shot, really. It doesn't even come off when you hit the ball with it, unless you use extreme English and hit it very, very hard.
Well, Rob, we're coming down to the end here, and before I let you go,
not the end. I hate the end. I love talking about pool. We haven't even talked about pool yet.
I know. I meant something. I wanted to give you a chance to plug one of your other projects, which is the Cue It Up podcast, which you've been doing for quite some time now. So how did that come to fruition a little bit? And tell our listeners here a little bit about the Cue It Up podcast.
Well, I hear again John Kramer had something to do with this. for some reason in my life in pool, his name comes up a lot. And he is friends with Nate, and they play pool against each other. It would be in the leagues down in Madison area. And they got to talking about stuff, and Nate said he was looking for somebody who would be willing to co-host with him. And John just gave him my name. He says, call Rob. Well, every time Nate called me, I wouldn't answer because I didn't know who he was. I got caller ID. I just wouldn't answer. Nate Mindham, who the heck is that? And I thought it was Knight Mindham. Okay, that's how I pronounced it.
Yeah,
N-E-I-G-H-T for Nate. Give me a break. That's Knight. And so I never answered it. So John called me and said, hey, has Nate been calling you? And I said, Nate who? Oh, that's that Nate. I said, yeah. I just don't answer it. He says, well, answer it. Or here's his number. Call him back. Get a hold of him. He wants to talk to you about doing a podcast. I don't even know what a podcast is. I've never listened to a podcast. Nate hates me. He totally hates me. I listened to one podcast in a year and a half. Well, it's over a year now. It'll be a year and 2 months. And I know. I know. It drives him crazy. He doesn't even want to talk about it anymore when I bring it up. But anyways, yeah, and so I called him. And he says, here, I'm going to start this podcast thing. I says, explain to me what a podcast is, please. And so he does, and I went, yeah, why not? Whatever. And so when we started, of course, he's a rookie, right? He's never done anything like this in his life. But he's really smart. It was going to work. It was inevitable that he was going to succeed in this podcast in some form or another, because he's got a way of figuring high-tech stuff out. He's like this mathematician person. That's kind of how that came about. I went, whatever. Come on. Sure, why not? Yeah, I'll do it. I don't know if I was the first person he asked or first person maybe he was serious about asking, but... Anyhow, I wanted to mention another person. You know, we talked a little bit about the place and stuff. And one of the first people and pool players I ran into who was younger than me at the place was Ron Dobaszynski.
Yes, yes.
We would play straight pool together for $1 a game to 50. $1, because I wasn't like Peter Williams. I had to play for $5. I didn't want to play. I just find $1 a game, and we played at 50. And he might have been 15 at the time. I might have been 17, something like that. And he was just learning how to play, just starting to play pool. Could maybe run 6-7 balls, you know, somewhere in that area. Mm-hmm. Maybe 15 years old, something like that. And I'll never forget it because just turning 18. I was about ready to go in the service because of the draft. And I can remember where he was at. And then when I came home on leave, like 2 years later, he owned a pool hall in West Duluth. And and I'll tell you what, I couldn't beat him. And that was just in 2 years. And he was running, he was running 70 plus balls at a time, and I could take maybe 50 at the time, so I couldn't beat him. I would go to that pool hall there and play him like crazy, and I went, geez, Ron, what's happened to you? You know, you really got good fast. 2 years, that's pretty good. I mean, to go from running 5 balls to 75 in 2 years,
that's hitting it
hard.
Yep. You have to put in a lot of time.
That, you know, Tommy George but Tommy was always, he was always in big games, you know, big games on the big table, 7 ball or, you know, big time golf games or something like that. Very seldom did he play straight pool. I bet he could, but I never saw him play much.
I'm glad you brought up Ron, because he's a fellow 2021 Hall of Fame nominee, and he was somebody I wanted to bring up in our conversation because he hasn't been talked about much on the show. Jerry Fredrickson brought him up a little bit, but other than that, we really haven't talked about him at all. And so I'm glad you brought that up. And the fact that, like you said, in 2 years, he went from running 5-6 balls to where he was. And of course,
right.
You know, we know that he turned professional in 1983, and he's arguably one of the greatest players in Wisconsin State history. The fact that he's from the Twin Ports area too is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And he's from Duluth, lives in Minnesota now, but could be in the Hall of Fame in Wisconsin simply because he spent most of his life here and ran a couple big-time pool rooms in Madison during that time, too. Not just a
right.
great pool player. He had a streak of like 4 or 5 years there where John Stitch had started his casino tournaments where Ron was winning almost every one of them. And I don't care who he was playing against, the best players in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And he was dominating. You could see the fear, even in some of the better players, toward the ends of these tournaments, these casino tournaments John was running, where they just would not be able to hold up mentally against Ron.
Yeah, once you've built yourself up to that point, and you have a sort of a reputation, if you're able to use that in your advantage, I mean that's huge.
Right. Yeah, Ron, and his game was fine until his eyesight started to go. When he started to have to wear glasses to read and was losing some of his close-up vision, that's difficult then with pool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because there's no good correction for it except surgery, and even that's not a sure thing with the close-up problem. Now it's better, I think. I've been thinking about having it now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing what they can do for that. And that's a struggle a lot of pool players go through.
Yeah, Randy Lamar from Wisconsin had surgery on, I think he had one eye done. He's got that kind of thing where one eye is working the opposite of the other eye or something like that. But, yeah, a lot of pool players have the eye surgery.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Look at Brandon Jacoby. He won the, what did he do? He had the eye surgery, and then his first tournament was the Jacoby Open. Didn't play real good in that, but the next one was the Wisconsin WSBA tournament, and he was on the winning team. Besides winning
right.
I think he won the team, and then I think he won the Scotch doubles also. Or no, it was the Scotch doubles, two-man Scotch doubles, not mixed.
Okay,
so
yep.
Have you had enough of me yet? Huh?
Well, hey,
I can go.
I know you got a busy schedule, you're working, you got a lot of things to do, and again, you know, I appreciate you coming on, and hey, we've left the door open to do this again, because like you said, there's a lot of things we didn't cover. We didn't even hardly get into talking about pool, and so we can definitely do that again, and maybe a
part
two.
Well, I'm
going to
mention Mike Miller, because you've had him on, and Mike is a dear friend of mine, and I hate him because he got me started in three cushion billiards, and now I'm a mess. I'm totally a mess, and someday, I don't know if I have to outlive him or what, but maybe I'll get as good as Mike at three cushion billiards. But because I started a year later, I'm like a year behind him. No matter what I do, I'm still a year behind. Maybe this little pandemic might have caught me up a little, huh?
Hey,
see, 3 months he hasn't been able to play, and I've played every day for 3 months, minimum of an hour, minimum. Some days it's three. So maybe that's a catch-up time for me.
There you go. You're going to have to call him and set something up.
I wonder if he's going to be scared now. Yeah.
Well, Rob, I appreciate it. Again, make sure you check him out with Nate Mindham on Cue It Up Podcast, and you can get more Rob and more of his stories and some analysis on the mostly the national pool scene and the pro pool scene is what they talk mostly about. It's good stuff. Check it out if you're interested. And again, we left the door open. We'll have you back on the show again. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Nick. And say hi to all my pool-playing friends up there in the Twin Ports.
Hey, will do. Me. Will do. Thanks a lot.
Yep, bye.
All right, so there you have Rob Hovick of Cue It Up Podcast, 2021 Wisconsin Billiard Hall of Fame nominee, and he threw the gauntlet out there for Mike Miller. He made the challenge. Maybe he has caught up to him because of the pandemic, he thinks. So we'll have to, if that happens, if that challenge happens, that might be a fun little live stream to do. Rob Hovick, Mike Miller, three cushion billiard, the gauntlet match, something like that. I think that's got potential to be something kind of fun to watch. Very cool story there. And Rob is one of two Twin Ports natives that is a nominee for the Billiard Hall of Fame here in Wisconsin right now. And Ron Dobaszynski is the other one. Was glad that he brought him up because he was in my notes. And the way the conversation was taking us there, I may not have gotten to him otherwise. So I was glad that we were able to touch on that a little bit. And that was really cool. And he took the bus from his dentist appointments over to the ringside on Superior Street to play against Peter Williams, one of the Williams brothers that owned the establishment. And he talked about his trials and tribulations playing against him and playing against somebody who is considered a better player than you, and how that can help improve your game is an important point to make. It's you know, if you're somebody who's trying to improve your game, the best thing you can do is at least go somewhere or do something to watch, observe better pool players and pick up what you can from them. And if you can play a few games against them or somebody of a higher caliber, it's only going to help you in the long run. So that's something important to think about. And he's the 1980 collegiate national champion. There's not many people that can say they have that title. And how about that? He loses the regional tournament, quite possibly due to that technicality of a rule break that wasn't called, and is somehow invited, despite he's the only person invited that didn't win a regional, because they only took one per year that didn't win the regional tournament, and he ends up winning the national championship. So that was a really cool story. And I think we just barely scratched the surface. We talked a little bit about his pool hall in Marshfield, Wisconsin, what he was able to do to help promote the game with an alternative school. Kids would come in. And he and I talked about that a little bit, a phone conversation we had prior to this interview about a week ago, prior to our conversation here on the show about a week ago. And we talked about that, and specifically about how that can help promote the game and get kids sort of hooked on the game. Because if they're not exposed to it, if you're not exposed to the game, you know, you very well may not be interested or have any interest that you may otherwise have had. Jerry Fredrickson, episode 5, mentioned the fact that a lot of kids today, you know, they don't go hang out at a pool hall or a place where you can play pool because they're unfamiliar with it. They don't know how to do it. And it's not, quote unquote, cool to do something that you don't know how to do. And again, Jerry Fredrickson said the same thing about Horseshoe. They didn't have any problem with kids, said the same thing about Diamonds, didn't have any issues with having kids under the age of 21 or 18 or whatever the law was at the time. And same thing we're hearing out of Rob Hovick with Rack and Roll Billiards out of Marshfield, Wisconsin, no issues whatsoever. So there's some incentive, I think, for any pool hall proprietor around the country, around the state, around the area that may be listening to this show right now. And if you're on the fence about doing something like that, I think if you can get the go ahead and if you have the initiative to do it, I think you should do it. Help promote the game. It'd be a great thing. So again, thank you very much to Rob Hovick for joining the show. And I think we may have some future conversations down the line here, because that was a lot of fun. And how about the fact that he is working? He's working on something. He said he was waxing teeth, I believe, during the interview. So that's a first. I mean, we've never had somebody working, let alone waxing something during the show. And through parts of that interview, you could hear the buzzing of possibly a tool or something that he was working on during that exchange. So apologize for some of the feedback and buzzing for throughout parts of that. But I think that made I think that made our conversation here a little unique. So I had no problems with it. So again, thank you. We've got to move on to our clip of the show.
And now it's time for Chalk is Cheap's clip of the show.
I sort of had plans to scour the internet and find a cool pool-related clip for this week's clip of the show, but I think it's only fitting and only right, seeing as how we are a sponsor of the event, to suggest that you get over to Cue It Up on Facebook for this week's clip of the show and watch the Cue It Up Cup 2 that is taking place right now this weekend as this podcast, as this episode is released. I encourage you to check it out. 10 of the top players from around the world are competing in a Moscone Cup style event, and I encourage you to check it out. And they also have some raffles and some drawings going off. So if you donate to the stream, $5 a ticket, you can win some great, great prizes. Prizes from all kinds of top brands. And you can win a t-shirt and sticker package from us right here on Chalk is Cheap Podcast. So I definitely do encourage you to check that out. And all right, it is time to say thanks to some of you who have left a review or recently liked the page. And some of you that have liked the page for quite some time, so let's get right into it. And again, if I mispronounce your name, I apologize. I did not do it on purpose. So bear with me if I mispronounce your name. Just yell at me. I apologize. So here we go. Matt Kitzman says, love the podcast. The stories are great, and it keeps the listener engaged from start to finish. Keep up the great work. Really appreciate you being a listener, Matt, and really appreciate that comment. That really makes me feel really good, like we're really accomplishing something here. So I definitely do appreciate that, and I'm glad that you are enjoying everything from start to finish. All right, and some new likers. We got quite a few here. We'll start with Jason Nelson. Thanks, Jason. Eric Behan, who is an international pool player, really good pool player. Appreciate that, Eric. Randy Reinfeldt, Mike Hickey, Wayne Studaker, Jerry West, and no, not the logo. It's not the logo. When I seen that come through, I thought it was the logo, Jerry West. It isn't the NBA logo, Jerry West, but it is a Jerry West nonetheless. Appreciate that, Jerry. Eric Nordstrom, appreciate it, buddy. Chase Golden, Brian Green, Jeff Gilson, and this one's really cool. This just came in as I recorded, and I'm glad it did. R.A. Dyer. The R.A. Dyer, that is the author of Untold Stories and Billiards Digest, and the books The Hustler and The Champ and Hustler Days. He's a columnist for Billiard Digest. He owns poolhistory.com. He used to report for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Really, really cool. Appreciate you being a listener and checking out the show. Thank you very much. That's really cool. So, again, those are our new likers. And we'll rewind here a little bit and go back to where we left off. And here we go. Ken Ornsby, Mike Miller. Boy, his name is mentioned a lot on this show, but there's nothing wrong with that. Dale Connor, who I've seen quite a bit in the last few weeks at those tournaments at Top Hat. Marcos Guerrera, Shannon Brown, Colt Mayfield, Heidi Newman, Tom Nicolosi, Ben Becker, Brent Hoffman of Hoffman Q's, Matt Wilhite, and Jeremy Sipes. So that rounds out as far as we will take it today. We'll keep that going on our next episode. Thank you again for everybody who's been with us from the beginning, or if you've been with us since the middle, or if you just jumped on the wagon. We're so glad that you did, and we hope you stay on the wagon and don't jump off, because we really hope to keep this going and keep bringing you some quality entertainment in the form of a billiards podcast. So really appreciate everybody doing that. And all right, we're just about ready to wrap this up. We've got to make our announcement for our next episode. And oddly enough, at this time, I don't have an announcement to make for who is going to be on episode 10. I have multiple conversations lined up for this coming week. I'm just not sure in which order they will go. So be rest assured, some great conversations with some local legends are on their way. However, I do have an announcement to make. We will be giving you a bonus episode here on Chalk is Cheap, and that's going to be a conversation with the other host of Cue It Up podcast, the man who's very busy right now running a stream and Cue It Up too, Nate Mindum of Cue It Up podcast, to talk about his life in pool, his podcast, and how that thing has blown up from where it started to where he's at now, and all of his connections that he has in the professional pool world. So that is coming as a bonus episode here on Chalk is Cheap. So stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for our announcement on our next guest for our local legend series. And again, I appreciate you all for joining us for another episode. And always remember, chalk is cheap. Unless it's Camus. We'll be right back.
I ran out of gas anyhow. I can't do any more teeth right now.